comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
And welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, ladies and gentlemen, whoever you are, wherever you happen to be, all around this beautiful place we call Earth. Thank you for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. We're here because you have a right to know, and we're here because you matter. Because you matter, we publish every week a free newsletter. It's called the K-Files. It's been in publication now since the year 2000, and we have people still subscribed who subscribed back in 2000. So it must be pretty good. The operative word here, though, is it's free. Now, you don't get too many things really free these days. You get things Washington, D.C. free. You know, you see things on the Internet says free. And you go over there and try to get whatever it is that's free, but they want you to sign up for this and sign up for that and recommend five of your friends and mortgage the house and pledge your firstborn. And then they'll give it to you for free. Well, that's Washington, D.C. free. That's free with strings attached. We don't do that. We speak English here. It's free. So all you have to do is get over to the website and just subscribe. And then you're going to get an email with a link in it that says activate your subscription. Do that, and you're in. You can unsubscribe anytime you want to, and we don't share that email list with anybody. We don't rent it out, loan it out, sell it, or any of that stuff. There's a lot of that going on the Internet these days as well, but we don't do that. It's just for the K-Files. So you're not going to be spammed as a result of having subscribed. Also, be sure you, if you're not a member, be sure you click where it says join. Now, that doesn't obligate you to join, but that does take you on the tour of our members community. And you get to see a little bit about what's in there and what other people say about it. So be sure you do that. If you're not a member, nobody but you can fix it. And remember, we're listener supported. If you don't support this show, it's gone. It's gone, just like that. It evaporates with the first month. We can't pay the bills. So that $7.50 a month, that comes out to 25 cents a day, less than you paid for your school lunch in the second grade. You won't miss it, but it can mean the difference in whether we get to keep broadcasting or not. Now, we've been doing this for 12 years. I think we're going to be able to continue doing this, as they say, till the cows come home. I'm not sure whose cows or what home, but it all depends on listener support. We need you, and you need what's in that members community. So click on where it says join and take the tour. See for yourself what's in the members community. On the subject of angels, on the subject of Nephilim, on the subject of Anunnaki and all that ancient weirdness, there are a lot of different people with a lot of different theories and a lot of different books. And, I did a seminar on this, and I decided, as you know, I don't think I've got the only views, and I don't think my views are necessarily absolutely correct just because they're my views. They are subject to change when I find new information that I find to be correct information. If you're not subject to that, then, of course, you're static and may as well join academia. Well, tonight we have a guest that's going to be talking about all of that. His name is C.K. Quarterman, and he will join us right after this break. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. You know, over the years, I've done a number of shows where I've had guests that have talked about this topic. And I occasionally get an email then from someone who says, well, you know, I read your book or I saw your seminar and I know you have a different view of this. Sometimes that's true, that I do have a different view. And then sometimes it's not. Sometimes the person who wrote the email missed the point. And so, you know, but and the overriding point is this show is not about promoting my views. Yes, I have some, but this show's not about promoting my views. It's about getting the information the guest has. So we had a guest last week who talked with us about this topic, and now we have a guest, C.K. Quarterman. He is a published author, a very successful businessman, and he's going to be talking with us about some of this tonight as well. I don't know how much we'll have time to get into. I don't know how deeply we can get into it, but you may hear something that you identify as, well, that's not what you said in your seminar. So, isn't it okay for folks to have different information? It might be correct information, mightn't it? It's a lost art in this country, I guarantee you, a lost art to just listen and think critically. But here, we practice it. My guest, as I said, is C.K. Quarterman, and he joins us from, I don't know, are you in South or North Carolina now?
At the moment, I'm in South Carolina.
Okay, because you live in both places, don't you?
That's correct. I travel back and forth.
Uh-huh. Okay, now, folks, what you want to do, you want to go to my website, and you want to scroll down till you see the picture about tonight's show, and then what you want to do is you want to look under that picture, because under that picture you're going to find a link that says show info, and whenever you click on that you'll read a little short bio for C.K. Quarterman, and there's a link to his website there as well. C.K., welcome to the show. We're delighted to have you.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
I was intrigued by the email that you sent me. You said that, you know, you were all about business and franchising and so forth, and you've written books about that, and, you know, that was your life. And then all of a sudden something happened. You had a strange encounter, and all of that changed. So I want to dive in with that. First, when was this, what year was it that it happened, and where did it happen?
I hate dates because I'm so terrible about it, but it was around November, I believe, of 2010.
Okay.
And I had been living in Florence, South Carolina, and we decided to... it's sort of a strange thing, but we decided to pack up everything we had and bought a motorhome and set out for North Carolina up to around a place called Franklin. And so we went up there and we ended up being there during the winter. I think we got there somewhere around June maybe, and I remember it was a real... I wasn't used to North Carolinian winter. I grew up in Georgia, and the most snow we ever saw, you could wipe away with your finger. And so I was a little bit out of sorts when I couldn't hardly open the door, couldn't get out, and this kind of thing. But to make that long story short, it set me to looking at my notes and sort of arranging my notes, because I'd sort of decided that I would either semi-retire or I would retire from what I was doing. I felt like the Lord was leading me into something, and I wasn't sure exactly what that was. And as I began to assemble these notes, I saw that I had a whole lot of them, that dealt with UFOs, UFO abductions, ancient history, giants, or what we would refer to as Nephilim, or a lot of people will say Nephilim. The Hebrew word is Nephilim, that were in the earth in ancient times. And as I began to put all that together in the snow and couldn't get out and nowhere to go, I began to wonder, why was I doing this? And, you know, and I began to realize that, because I had self-published some books before in franchising, and I had sold quite a few, in fact, made a living selling legal forms that I had written. It was a little niche that I got into, and had quite a few of those published. So I knew writing, and I knew, of course, that getting something published is a whole different story than sitting down and writing something. So I was debating this particular, you know, whether or not I wanted to put together a book, because, like I said, the pitfalls of the publishing industry. So anyway, it was late one night, about 3 o'clock in the morning, and we had gotten out of the motorhome at that period of time, and just needed a little more space and breathing room, and had rented a chalet up on a hot top of a mountain, and had a long winding driveway down the mountain, and we have a dog named Star. And so I figured, okay, it's 3 o'clock, I'm going to bed, I don't want to be woken up, so Star, let's go for a walk. Which she normally is more than willing to do. But this particular instance, I had to force her out. And so I went out with her, took a large flashlight, and as I encouraged her to take care of business, I was shining a flashlight around, and as my flashlight beam hit a tree, well, standing by this tree was this creature, and this creature, you know, I didn't have any measuring stick, but it was well over 7 feet tall. I don't want to exaggerate the fish story, you know, and it get bigger every time I tell it, but it could have been between 7 and 10 feet. But the thing that was most striking about it is that it had the face of a dog, the arms of a man, and it stood on 2 feet, and it just stared at me. And it was just exactly what I had been studying about, which were these ancient giants, hybrids, Nephilim, that were in the earth, and that I believe the Bible teaches are coming again.
Okay, so let me ask you about a little bit about the description of this creature before we move on very far from it. It's at least 7 feet tall and maybe taller.
Right.
It has the head of a dog, and you said the arms of a man. Were they hairy?
Oh, they were hairy. Everything was hairy.
Okay, so it was like a Bigfoot, but with the head of a dog.
Well, a dog or a wolf. I would call it, from, you know, what I've seen, you know, on clips and videos, I would call it a Bigfoot or a Sasquatch, or, you know, something like that, I think would describe it. It was definitely otherworldly. It was something that was not natural.
Now, how can we be sure about that?
Well, I don't think there is any way to be sure, because I don't think anybody to this date has caught one.
Mm-hmm. Well, what I'm saying about that, the reason for that question is every year they're finding species that they didn't know existed. Mm-hmm. And they'll say it's a new species. No, it's not. It's been here. It's just that we're just that much less dumb than we were. We discovered something that's been here, and we hadn't discovered it before. And what I wonder is, these things that they call Bigfoot, they've been seen and everything, but nobody really has a grip on where they live or how they live. And, you know, Something like 85% of America, I may be wrong about this, but I think it's something like 85% of the landmass of America is unpopulated.
I don't know about the percentages there, but I can tell you this, that North Carolina, where we were at, is not that unpopulated.
Mm-hmm.
And for something like that to show up there and then disappear, and the studies that I've looked at dealing with these instances of things like this, two things that are common. One is they tend to follow UFOs. There tends to be a correlation between them. Now, I did not see one that night. They also tend to appear and disappear, very similar to UFOs. UFOs can be tracked on radar. They can leave burn marks on the ground. Then all of a sudden, they're not there. They're gone someplace. Where they've gone to?
Mm-hmm.
I think the same mechanism is at work with these creatures. I think they're actually interdimensional.
Okay, so this one, when you saw this creature, now you had your dog out there with you.
Mm-hmm.
What happened to the creature? Did you just stand there and look at it, and it walked off in the woods, or did it just vanish, or what happened?
Well, Kevin, the great, big, brave man that I am turned around and got inside as quick as he could. The dog was already ahead of me.
Okay. So you didn't see.
I cannot tell you that I stood there and stared him down. I did not.
And did it look directly at you?
It did. It looked as if it had some intelligence. It didn't look like a dumb animal.
Mm-hmm. But you didn't have an inclination to walk over and stick your hand out and shake hands and introduce yourself?
Oh, no.
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 Okay, so, all right, so you and the dog hightail it back into the house, and then what happened?
Well, after I stopped to think about it, it gets a little scary. We talked about it and thought about it, and I guess about an hour later, we went back out and looked to see what we could find.
Did you find any footprints or anything like that?
No, nothing. We did not.
Mm-hmm. Is there
can't
any?
Explain that one either. No.
On the website, I've got a picture for tonight's show, and what it shows is a Bigfoot body with a wolf's head.
Mm-hmm. I saw that.
Is that anything similar to what you saw?
Not exactly, but after all of this happened, I did some research, and there are a certain percentage of the Bigfeet that are dog-faced. I'd say the difference between what you've got on the website and maybe what I saw was quite a bit larger and heavier proportioned.
Okay. Well, the thought that struck me when I saw this, actually I constructed that. Once I got it constructed and looked at it, I wondered, is it possible that what you saw was a bear standing on its back legs?
I wondered about that. Except that I've seen a lot of bears, and the proportions were out of proportion for a bear.
Okay.
The snout was, the head was thinner, and the snout was more protruding than you would think that a bear would be. And a bear tends to be almost like this big, round, furry ball. And no, this wasn't quite exactly that way.
One of the things that, if it's a bear standing on his back legs, the proportion, the length of the legs from the bear's, where his hips would be to the ground, is not proportioned like either humans or like any of the descriptions of Bigfoot. And so what you're saying is that everything about this looked like Bigfoot, and it had a dog's head.
it looked like a cross between what you would think a person and an animal would look like. Like I said, I've seen bears. I've seen them stand on their legs, and I don't think that's what this was.
Any possibility this was a werewolf?
Well, in my mind, a werewolf and a Nephilim would be the same thing. It would be a hybrid creature.
Okay. So you went back out. You took a look around. You didn't find any telltale signs that this creature had been there. How did your dog respond to this creature being out there when you and the dog were both out there? What was the dog doing?
Wanting to go back inside.
Was she crying? Was she yelping? Was she whimpering? What was she doing?
She was, I would use the word procrastinating. She wasn't wanting to go away from the door.
Do you think she saw the creature?
I don't know if she saw it, but she certainly knew something wasn't right. She didn't want to be out there.
So how, okay, now this happened in the wintertime, right?
Mm-hmm. It was cold, yes.
There's snow on the ground.
That's correct.
And the creature left no footprints?
None that I could find the next day, no.
Did it snow that night?
That's a good question, Kevin. I don't honestly know.
Yeah. If you had a hard snow that night, it could have filled in the footprints. That happens sometimes. Okay, so how did this event make any changes in you? I mean, okay, so you saw it. So what?
Well, the change that it made, you know, and I've had a lot of people ask me that I think that it was providential, and they like that word, providential. And that's a big theological word, but what I would interpret or translate that to mean was this, that if I could walk out my door and see a werewolf or a Sasquatch or a Nephilim in the middle of North Carolina, then one, they had to be much more common than I thought that they were. And two, all the notes that I had been putting together were true. And that...
All right, we have to step away for break. We'll pick up right there, though, when we come back. Ladies and gentlemen, more with C.K. Quarterman right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and we're talking tonight about really a very strange encounter that our guest, C.K. Quarterman, had in 2010, and it has caused him to do further research and come to some conclusions and write a book. So what we're doing is we're talking about that right now, and we'll get into where that led him in just a moment. As we went away for break, though, C.K., was telling us, I said, okay, so you saw this thing, so what? What changes did it make in you? And you had just started to tell us whenever the break took over. So if you will, pick up there and let's move forward.
Sure. I took it basically as a sign that I should put this stuff together and look for a publisher. I knew finding a publisher for a book is just about nil. I mean, it is very, very, very difficult. So I don't, you know, other than to say that, like I said, I just felt like if they were this common, that somebody had to get the word out. The message had to be gotten out that the days are short.
All right. Now, I'm curious about that. What is it about seeing this creature that made you interpret it eschatologically?
Because in Matthew, the 24th chapter, the 37th verse, the apostles, the disciples, come to Christ and they say, and this is my own words, but they say, "Well, Lord, tell us, what will the days be like when you return? What will they look like?" Now, often, unfortunately, we Americanize the Bible. We tend to read it as Americans. We see it through eyes of Americans without a historical background. And the disciples listened to what he said quite differently than what we hear. We hear him say, you know, the days they'll be given in marriage and basically things will go on like it was until the flood came and the world was destroyed. But what the disciples heard was, it will be as the days of Noah. And immediately they knew what he was referring to was the sixth chapter of the book of Genesis. And in the sixth chapter of the book of Genesis, we have the most interesting of probably all of the stories in the Bible. It's a very supernatural incursion of forces, which are heavenly but evil forces, into the world, where these fallen angels intermarry with the children of men, and they produce all kinds of monstrosities called Nephilim, which are these legendary Greek heroes and Roman heroes of mythology. This is the kernel of truth that exists all through the world's mythologies. And when they asked him, what will these days be like, he was telling them, it's going to be like this again. These fallen angels are going to interact with humanity and also with animals. And they're going to create these hybrids again. And that's what it'll look like just before the days when I return.
So, who are the fallen angels?
Pardon?
Who are the fallen angels? Because in Genesis chapter 6, it actually doesn't call them angels. It calls them the B'nai Elohim.
Exactly. The B'nai Elohim. It's only used six times. It comes primarily, it's used in the book of Job, and it refers to, each time that references the sons of God, it refers to angels. In the Septuagint, Alexandrian translation of the Septuagint.
Well, who decided that that's angels?
Well, who decided?
Yeah, because it doesn't say angels. The word for angel is malach. And so it's not B'nai Malach, B'nai HaMalach. It's B'nai HaElohim.
Right. Right. B'nai meaning type or category of.
Mm-hmm.
And Elohim is where the word...
it's the family name. Family name of God. It's the tribal name.
Right. But that combination is only used in Job, and is always translated as angels.
Well, it's used in Psalm 82, where he says, "Have I not said you are all Elohim?"
And but not B'nai Elohim.
Okay, I'll grant you that.
And it's the only thing that makes sense. The three interpretations, if you would, standard of that, those sons of God, or those B'nai Elohim, and that is that they're the godly line of Seth, or that they're royalty, or that they're angels. Now, the problem that you deal with is that whatever these were, they produced giants.
Okay.
You know, godly people marrying ungodly people don't create giants any more than godly people do marrying godly people.
Mm-hmm.
Royalty intermarrying or interbreeding with common man, so to speak, doesn't produce giants. There'd have been no reason to have used that word Nephilim, which is also the same word that is used when the Israelites go into Canaan land and they come back. They send out 10 spies and the spies come back and say that they're Nephilim in the land. You know, they're giants in the land.
Yeah, of the descendants of Anak.
The descendants of Anak, that's mm-hmm. right. And actually, Goliath is not even a giant. He's a son of a giant.
Yeah, he's just a big boy.
A huge one.
Mm-hmm.
There were tribes of them. But prior to the deluge, it says in one place in the Old Testament, some of these giants were as tall as the cedars of Lebanon. So they were monstrous. And of course, on my website, I also bring out some of the extra biblical literature, which if you bring those in, which I like to refer to them as historical literature, because I think there's some historicity to them, like the Book of Enoch, the Book of Jubilees, for instance, have some pretty long history, and they elaborate on the story a little bit more so and say that there are actually 200 angels that descended upon Mount Hermon and interbred with the daughters of Adam. And it goes on to say, but the King James Version implies it, Enoch goes right out and says that they lusted after the daughters of men. So here we have these angels, which I think we could term as fallen angels by their actions, which are taken, and I like that word in the King James, it's that they took of them wives of all they chose. And I'm not a Hebrew scholar, but in that wording, I get sort of the idea they may not have had a whole lot of choice in that.
Oh, yeah, very, very definitely. The women had no choice in it.
Right. That's sort of the way I read that. And
today we call that kidnap and rape.
Right. And what I do in the book is I tie all of that together with the modern phenomena that we have of UFO abductions. And I make the premise of the book is that the same thing is going on today under a different heading, under different colors today, if you would, as was going on in Genesis, the sixth chapter.
Okay, so elaborate on that. How is that the same?
Well, because you have, shall we say, creatures or entities which are kidnapping women out of their bedrooms in the middle of the night, forcing them to have some kind of sexual experiences or probings. And historically, it's not one abduction, but it's actually two. And the last thing I read was it's approaching 3% of the American population now that are willing to claim that they have been abducted. And oftentimes on the second abduction, they are shown something that's taken out of their wounds.
So on these abduction stories, as you say, approaching 3% that claim they've been abducted, how much credence do you give that? Do you you think these abductions are actually happening, or are these the imaginations of hysterical people?
Well, I think it's a cauldron of all of it. I think some of it is sleep paralysis. I think some of it is demonic, as in other types of entities. I think some of it is fallen angels, which are monkeying with the human genome. I talked to a woman up in Canada, in Quebec, this year, and she was telling me, she swore she had not been with a man in 5 years. And I believe her. I think she was telling the truth. She was abducted and became pregnant and miscarried before she could be abducted the second time.
Well, I've had guests on this show, ladies who have given us similar stories, and in some cases, it was multiple abductions, multiple pregnancies, and in one case, part of this has been medically documented. So you think that there are some of these abduction stories that are believable and that are true?
Correct.
And you think that the abductors are whom?
They're fallen angels in demonic identities, entities.
Are there any extraterrestrials that are not demonic?
No, there are no extraterrestrials. They're interdimensionals.
Okay, so these angels then are interdimensionals. Are there any interdimensionals that are not demonic?
Well, yes, there are interdimensional. You have good angels and bad angels.
Okay. So if good angels show up, how are we going to know that's a good angel and not one of these 200 bad guys?
Well, we actually don't know the number of bad guys. I think that they have continued to fall throughout history. So I don't know even the numbers even ever actually said.
All right, but how do we tell them apart?
Kevin, that's a good question. I don't even know if I can give you an answer. Because even evil angels, fallen angels, can appear as angels of light. They can put on a light show to dazzle you as much as they will. It's usually you have to look at the agenda. That is, what are they trying to accomplish? What are they saying?
Yeah, but if they're lying to you, it doesn't matter what they say, does it?
Well, generally, they're going to have a gospel. It's just not going to be the right one.
How do we know that the interdimensional who showed up and talked with Mary and told Mary she was going to be pregnant... And we have a break coming up. I'll let you think about this through the break, and we'll get to it when we come back. But how do we know that was not one of the bad guys? We'll be back. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're talking this evening with C.K. Quarterman. He is an author. He is a successful businessman. And he's published in books in the realm of business. He's published also in our genre, which I, you know, it's the world of the strange and unexplained. Tonight we're talking about these Nephilim and all this ancient weirdness that took place, and his book is that point of his book is that it is happening again. It's happening now. The ancient weirdness is back. So as we went away for break, I had asked the question, how can you tell the difference between what he's calling the good angels and these bad angels or fallen angels? And I asked the question, how do we know the one that appeared to Mary and said, you're going to have a baby? How do we know that was a good guy, CK?
Well, Kevin, I think that, first of all, the angel had nothing to do with the impregnation of Mary. He simply was a messenger. He carried a message which was backed by 6,000 years or so of prophecy, maybe 4,000 years of prophecy. These identities that are appearing to people, that are abducting them in their out of their beds at night, these are things that are against people's will. This isn't things that people are wanting to happen. And I think that's one of your major differences here, is that these people are abducted against their will. We have no indication with Mary, other than that she was, one, a virgin, and two, that she was told not to fear, and three, the angel only brought a message. He was not involved in it in the impregnation process, nor did he take her anywhere. I think that's what we could look at in those situations.
Okay, so if one of these guys shows up and he just wants to have a conversation with you and give you a message, doesn't want to take you anywhere, doesn't force you to do anything, you're probably dealing with one of the good guys. Is that the point?
Well, I would certainly judge what he had to say, but I'd feel a whole lot better about the fact he wasn't taking me anywhere against my will.
What if an angel showed up and delivered the message that you have the blessing of God, you have the power of God on you, and I want you, God wants you to go and kill everybody in that next town over there. It's not all that big a town. Kill them all. Let God sort it out. Would this be one of the good guys or one of the bad guys?
Well, he actually told the Israelites that.
Yeah, he did. That's what I'm curious about.
Well, I think that you have to understand the question of why did he tell the Israelites to do what he did. I think that if you knew the reason why, then it would answer, the question would be self-answering.
Well, I know what the theologians say is why, but why do you...
What did the theologians say, Kevin?
Well, let's hear what you say. What's the reason?
Well, I believe these tribes, like I mentioned earlier, they were hybrids. And when God told them to go in there, he said, kill every man, woman, and child, and beast among them. These fallen angels had worked all sorts of iniquity in there. And what God was trying to do was to destroy this, to keep from having to actually destroy the world again as he had in the deluge. So it made perfect sense to the Israelis as to why they were doing that. You know, if you had a town next door and half the people walking around looked like hairy dog-faced Sasquatches, I might not have to question the messenger who gave me the message.
So it would be all right to kill them because they look different.
Well, if they were half-breeds, I'd say I might not question it as much. I didn't say quite the way you put it, but I think it would be more understandable.
All right, so this thing that you saw back in 2010, do you identify that as a Nephilim? Was that a Nephilim, or is it the product of the Nephilim?
Kevin, I haven't had anybody ask me that, but my hunch is it's a product of a Nephilim.
Okay, so this would have been the offspring or product of their hybridization program.
That would be my hunch, yes.
So what do the Nephilim look like?
I think they would be much larger, much more aggressive, much of everything more. But there again,
but are they all hairy like that? I mean...
No, I don't think so.
So they look like us?
I think in a lot of ways they do. I think an Nephilim could look... Well, I think an Nephilim could be part animal and part human. I think it could be more human than more animal. Do you remember the Egyptian hieroglyphs?
Sure.
Or like the Sphinx is a good example, had the face of a man and the body of a lion.
Yeah.
That would have been a Nephilim.
How do you know that?
Well, because it would have been a process of a fallen angel and a lion, and you'd have a lion-faced man.
You'd have a man-faced lion.
Basically. Or verse, vice versa.
Mm-hmm. All right, so the Nephilim, here's what I'm getting at, here's what I'm questioning. In one case, you're describing the Nephilim as being the offspring of the fallen angels with interbreeding with either humans or animals. In another case, you're describing the Nephilim as looking like us and basically being the fallen angels.
No, according to the Book of Enoch, the Nephilim, when they interbred, the Nephilim would be a fallen angel that would interbreed with a human or an animal. That Nephilim, that child is called a Nephilim. That Nephilim, if it interbred with another human or an animal, would create what was called an Eloid. An Eloid could also interbreed and are called Elojays. So what you get is a whole bunch of interbreeding and a whole bunch of messing up.
I like that. That sounds like a good country song, a whole lot of messing up.
Well, so bad God flooded the world to destroy all of it.
So if it was all destroyed, how is it that it's back?
You've got angels who have continued to fall and who have continued to do the same thing.
So is God making new angels to replace the ones that are falling out of the chute there?
I don't think he's making any new ones. I think angels have continued to fall all throughout eternity. I don't think they all fell at one time.
One of the things I've heard people say, and I've heard actually debated in amongst theologians, is whether angels even have the capacity for sexual relations. And there's a very strong contingent among theologians who say that the angels do not have that capacity.
Well, I would say that godly angels in heaven certainly don't use that capacity. But the scriptures that are referred to in Matthew do not state that they cannot or that ungodly angels could not. Just simply states that there's basically no use for it in heaven, no more than there's use for marriage.
So it's kind of like I know how to drive, but there's no need for me to drive a car in heaven, so even though I know how, I just wouldn't be doing that.
Right, exactly.
You know, there's a whole lot of guys out there that just unsigned up for heaven.
Well,
I kid you, there's a bunch of guys out there that said, "Whoa, well, if that's how it is, I don't want to go."
Well, only thing I can tell them to give them any peace of mind at all is in the resurrection, they don't lose anything.
Okay.
Won't anything be dropping off?
All right. Okay. The deal is the Nephilim. The fallen angels. This original group, according to Enoch, had 200. I believe it was Enoch, or was that Jasher that said there were 200?
Enoch
that landed on Mount Hermon, and so. They landed, they looked around, they saw these human women, they said, "Man, these are some good looking chicks, we gotta have some of these," and that's when they fell. We'll be back right after this break, so don't go away. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. For those of you joining us just now in this second hour, welcome aboard. We're glad to have you. And my sincere sympathy to you for whatever it is that kept you away for that first hour. And here's hoping sincerely that you never, ever have to encounter that tragedy again. We are talking with C.K. Quarterman. He is a successful businessman and author. had an encounter with a very strange creature looking very much like a Sasquatch back in 2010. Unlike most of the descriptions we have of Sasquatch, this one had the head and face of like a dog or a wolf. And it caused him to really get started into investigating a whole bunch of stuff about Nephilim and fallen angels and all that kind of stuff, ancient weirdness. And yes, we have had a number of guests on over the years who have talked about this, but he's got a different perspective on a lot of this, and I wanted you to hear his perspective on this. When we went away for break, CK, we had just given the guys the bad news that, you know, you get to heaven, things are not exactly the same. And, you know, there's not going to be any hanky-panky going on in heaven. And I said a whole bunch of guys just got out of line. But you said you don't lose anything in the resurrection. Yeah, okay, but so you don't lose anything. Well, what use is it?
All right, you got me stumped on that one.
Okay, well, someday we'll get you back on. I'll give you time to think about it and see if we can get an answer to, are we going to do anything besides strum harps when we get over to heaven?
Oh, I think we'll do more than that.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's not sounding real promising here tonight, but anyway. Okay, so these fallen angels, you think are interdimensional beings. Does that mean that they can take on a physical form that we could touch, that we could feel with our hands if we were to try and touch them?
That's correct.
And then they can just dematerialize in front of us? Is that?
Well, I think once a fallen angel, has taken on a human form in this realm, I don't think he can go back.
Why?
Because there's a scripture in 1 Peter, or 2 Peter, I forget at the moment, but talks about when they've left their domain, they've got a spiritual body that is a spiritual body, but when they put that off, it's just my feelings, they're not able just to pick it back up again.
Okay, so this one would be in the category of this is just your belief about it, your speculation about it.
Right, I think that's right. It's a speculation, but I think it's a one-way trip for
them. Mm-hmm. All right, I'll tell you what I want to do, ladies and gentlemen. We are going to open the telephone lines tonight. I think a lot of you may have some questions of Mr. Quarterman. Some of you are religious. Some of you, like myself, are not religious. Though I am not atheist, I am not a religious individual. I think it's very interesting to hear all different points of view, and you cannot discount. This is a big. Before you call, let me get on a soapbox here. This is a big mistake the so-called secular world makes, and that is because they've chosen not to be religious. They have decided that all of these ancient texts that the religious people refer to are somehow mythological or fictional, and yet they'll refer, those same people will refer to texts like the Mahabharata, or they'll refer to the writings of Nostradamus, and so forth. This is foolish. I mean, why would you throw out a body of information if you choose not to accept the religious beliefs that are attached to it sometimes? Your choice. But why would you throw the information out? Listen, I have not thrown out my copy of the Communist Manifesto that I had to read. They made me read that when I was in high school. I haven't thrown that out. I've read it. I need to know it. Because there are a lot of people who do believe it. and who do accept it. But that doesn't mean I have bought into it. So let's not throw babies out with bathwater here tonight. If you are religious, that's fine. If you're not religious, that's fine. Let's talk about this ancient weirdness and the possible hybridization program that may possibly be going on now and may take the shape and form of what Mr. Quarterman is talking about here. You may have other views about it. That's what open lines are for, and they're open. 623-444-5889. 623-444-5889. And as always with the telephone lines, use it or lose it. It's time to use your freedom of speech. Call, ask your questions, make your comments. And Mr. Quarterman will respond to those. Now, if you're not in the USA and you're not in Canada, you can either call that number or you can use our flash message feature on the website. Just go over to my website, kevinsmithshow.com, and you will see a link right above tonight's the picture about tonight's show, and the link says flash message. You can use that to communicate with us, okay? But if you're in the USA or Canada, use the telephone, 623-444-5889. All right, so you published this book. What's the name of the book? For some reason, we don't have any of your audio now. You have cut your audio off. And I don't know why.
How about now?
Yeah, we got you.
Okay, I'm sorry. Hit the wrong button, my mistake.
Yeah, I do that sometimes, and my excuse is I just say it right on the air. Hey, I'm an old guy. I can get away with it.
Well, I hit it with my leg. Does that count?
Yeah.
It's Fallen Angels, Giants, UFO Encounters, and the New World Order.
That's a big ball of wax. We'll get into more of that in just a minute. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Brent from Wyoming.
Hello, Brent.
You remember that thing we had last week, maybe the week before, when it was, your feed was skipping all over the place?
Yeah.
It's doing it again.
Maybe at your place. I don't think it's doing it worldwide as it once was.
Yeah. Okay, but Mr. Quarterman, I have a question for you.
Yes, sir.
When you had that encounter back in November 2010... What kind of energies did you feel coming off that creature, if you felt any, or if you remember? In other words, did it affect you on an emotional level?
I think that I was very much unaffected, but I don't think that's the standard case with most people. I think that's a very good question. I don't remember being affected at all.
Now, here's another question. Before that time, what was your background so far as religion and spirituality and all that stuff is concerned?
I've been pretty much multi-denominational. I went to Bible college back in the 80s. I worked with homeless, drug addicts, but never really became denominationalized. I've been to Churches of God, Assemblies of God, Baptist, grew up Methodist, just sort of not been affiliated, but been very much involved.
So, in other words, you were kind of grounded in the real world, but you had experiences with and were aware of the spiritual side of things.
Well, exactly. I would say that's true, yes.
My thought, this is just a thought, is it the reason you were not as affected as some, maybe the fact is that you are so well grounded in reality?
It could be. Like I said, I wasn't even scared. I just, you know, feet saved the body. But I think I'm a little bit of that type of a person. I don't think too hard about it until I make whatever decisions I need to make and do what I need to do.
Well, I congratulate you, sir. That's all I had to say, Kevin.
Okay, Brent. Thank you.
Thank you, Brent.
what he's referring to with the problem we had last week, I did a show about last week about pyramids in Antarctica. And the show got hit worldwide. I mean, it was unbelievable the way we were being hit with someone, maybe that New World Order bunch you talk about, interrupting the audio stream and the video stream. But I don't see any indications that that's happening worldwide tonight. There may be a few areas that are experiencing some problems. But let me say this. The internet as a whole has been experiencing problems, folks, and has been experiencing problems ever since they decided that the cyber warfare guys are going to own the internet, and they've been installing stuff. And I don't know that that is the cause, but the timing is coincidental for sure. And so that may be the deal. 623-444-5889, 623-444-5889 is the number for you to call. And it's the number for you to express your comment, your thoughts about what C.K. Quarterman has expressed so far. And if you're not in the USA and you're not in Canada, then you can give us a flash message. So if you're outside the USA and outside of Canada, you can do a flash message. And I just got a flash message, but it's from someone in the USA. And, folks, I don't even see those. It dumps those. It shows me one came in. It shows me where it came from, and that's it. If it's in the USA or Canada, you got to use the telephone, all right? 623-444-5889. Why has all of this... Okay, let me back up and catch something that you mentioned. You talked about when the apostles, at that time disciples, are asking Jesus, what will be the signs of when you come again? And he says, basically, as it was in the days of Noah, it will be that way again. Okay, then you described the hybridization program going on in the days of Noah, and it was, if Genesis is true, that was going on, assuming that it's true, that was happening, and that's the reason for the flood, and the reason Noah was picked was because he was pure in his genealogy. He was not a hybrid, and it says so.
You're correct.
All right, now... why, after all these thousands of years, bang, bingo, here they are again, it's all happening again? Why is that happening?
Well, I can only give you my intuition on that. The Lord said that it would. My intuition is that there is nothing new under the sun. The things that have been will be, as that old saying goes. I think that what's going to happen is that, and I speak about it in the book as far as the New World Order, I think there's going to be a forthcoming, if you would, of, quote, alien contact. And by alien, I mean fallen angels masquerading as aliens, and that this is going to be part of the New World Order, and what you will see are these hybrids, which will look like aliens. They'll look like all kind of different things, but they'll go under the heading of, quote, aliens. And if we can trust some of the historical writings, such as First Enoch, one of the carrots, if you would, these fallen angels put forth to mankind was technology. Well, how many thousands of years, you know, even since then, have these angels have had to develop technology? You know, my gut tells me that what they're doing is trading technology for the leverage when things, if you would, the timing is right, the full disclosure comes about, and they'll have technology. They'll come forth with a kind of technology that will fool even the elect, as the Bible would say in Thessalonians, if that were possible.
Do you think there are intelligent civilizations on other planets, maybe in other star systems?
Well, the only thing that I know for sure is if there were, the speed of light would prohibit us from ever contacting them. The barrier of the speed of light.
Well, the speed of light is definitely not the barrier, because it's the minimum speed of the freeway in the universe. It's not the maximum. And I can prove that to you very quickly. You've heard that E, energy, equals MC squared.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Einsteinian, right?
Mm-hmm.
If that is true, and if the speed of light is actually the speed limit of the universe, then there is no energy, and therefore there is no universe. And here's why. You don't get real energy from made-up equations. If that equation is true, real energy comes from mass times the speed of light squared. Otherwise, we could just say energy equals Gwichit times Guadalpaddle squared. And it would be just as valid. If it's a real formula and you get real energy out of it, then you really have to have the ability to square the speed of light.
Okay, I'd have to think about that one. You've got me there.
And if you go faster than the speed of light, you've outrun illumination. And you're now traveling at the speed of dark. That'll give you two things to worry about. And I'm going to worry about these angels that have ability and don't use it in heaven. That's what I'm going to worry about. All right. Okay. Now, what is it that possesses... Okay, first of all, there is no race of beings called angels. That's a job description. Angel means messenger. In Greek, it's angelos. In Hebrew, it's malak. And it just means messenger. Like plumber means plumber, and pilot means pilot. So you have some so-called angels that are from one race called Elohim. You have some that are from another race called Seraphim. So I would assume that we have some Elohim and some Seraphim that are mixed up together in this fallen angel group. What is it that possesses these guys who had the job description of messenger that wound up coming to Earth, landing on Mount Harmon? What possessed them to say, hey, you know what? Let's have a little rebellion here, and we know we're going to lose.
Well, I think that my thought on the whole situation is what would cause an angel to rebel to start with. And in the book, I go back to the very beginning where I make the suggestion that there was trade going on between the planets, and that Lucifer was actually in charge of all of that trade. Without spending the time to give you the scriptures and the background of that, let me just give you the overview of it. With him being in charge of the trade, what he actually wanted to do was usurp all of that and say, I'll have all of the power, much like the mafia mentality. Mm-hmm. He wanted to be the godfather. But the thing that took place was this was seen by all of the heavenly assembly. All of the heavenly congregation saw this. And to put this in terms of humanity that we can understand, just as an example, let's say that you have a child that grows up watching its father abuse its mother. And it says, I'll never hit my wife, and I grow up and I get to be a grown man and I have my own wife. I'll never do that. Well, all of a sudden one day he's grown, he's got a wife, and wham, he hits her. He acts just like the old man. Now, why does that happen? I mean, it doesn't always happen, but why? Well, it's because evil planted a seed, and it just took time for that evil to spring roots and to grow in the soil and to manifest itself. And I think the same thing is true with these heavenly angels, is that they have fallen throughout eternity as what they saw in the beginning. They contemplated it in their hearts, and at different times they've chosen to fall, and in different ways.
All right, let's take this phone call, and then I've got a question about that. Mm-hmm. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, Kevin, this is Rusty from Michigan.
Hello, Rusty.
Hi. Hi, CK.
Hello.
You was talking about the, how are you going to tell what if one of these angels is disguised as a human, how are you going to tell the difference by looking at them?
Without, all I can tell you, what I can say is that what Enoch said. Enoch, when he saw them descend upon Mount Hermon, he said that their privy members were so large that the cattle on a thousand hills fled. Now, how can you tell that? I don't know, but I'm sorry, that's what the ancient texts say.
So here's the deal, Rusty. If you see a guy walking down the street, he's a great big guy, and as he walks down the road there, all the sheep run to the other side of the pasture, and all the cattle run to the other side of the pasture, you probably got you a demon there.
Okay, now, you've been talking about these, seemingly, there seems to be like the line, let's take it from Noah, which was our pure blood, and then you got the other side where they've been intermixed. Do you see that on this earth today, there are those who are of the Noah lineage and those who are mixed blood? Right now,
well,
existing on this earth?
Others,
everybody walk around as humans, but are there two different types of humans, so to speak?
Well, I think on the ark, they're only pure blood. I think God approved everything on the ark when he shut the door on the ark. Now, I think that there have been other hybridizations, other mixing and inbreeding since then. And I don't know that you could always exactly know that. How would you know? If it were an angel you were talking to that had taken human form, it would be very difficult for you to know that that's what he was.
Right.
Okay, guys, we have to take a break. Rusty, you want to hang on through the break?
Yeah.
All right. We will be back, ladies and gentlemen, right after this.
From Burnaby, British Columbia, Canada. When a topic in history or science or the paranormal is too outré or controversial for conventional media, where can we go for information? To the Kevin Smith Show, of course. I'm a big fan.
All right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and let me say this quickly about the squeal you heard. This time, it was on purpose. I got a flash message from the UK saying that our audio signal in the UK has been broken up badly, but has smoothed out, and everything's fine now. I just wanted to, I know it was uncomfortable for you, but I just wanted to blow the lines out a little bit there for whoever it is that's trying to interrupt us this evening. If you happen to be anti-American, anti-constitutional, anti-freedom thugs, whoever you are, even if you get a government paycheck, whoever you are, that little squeal was for you, just for your ears. And I can tell you you've been trying this crap now for 12 years, and I'm still here. Get a clue. I won. All right, we're talking with C.K. Quarterman, and on the telephone with us is Rusty from Michigan. Rusty, you had another question.
Yeah. Take the birth of Jesus, which was half human and half alien, or you can say God, it's whatever, he wasn't from this planet. So, must be when God destroyed the people in the flood, it was not simply because it was a mixed race, because Jesus himself is mixed. Is that...
He's thinking.
How you see that?
Well, I was trying to... I'd hate to put it this way, but you have a point in that God is not of this world. But I think there's a big difference in God in Christ reconciling the world unto himself, and fallen angels interbreeding with humans. We know that they were cannibalistic,
right?
That they were huge, they were just evil. I think there's a lot of this, but there's a big difference there.
But right, but that kind of was my point. God, I guess a lot of people I've talked to, a lot of people I've talked with anyway, seem to think that it was because they were inbred that they were, you know, that God destroyed them. But that can't be the reason, because they were inbred. It's got to be, like you're saying, it's got to be something to do with the evil. It can't be just because they were inbred.
Right, right. They were terribly evil, yes.
So, the mating with an alien then is not against God's code then, right?
Well, I think the problem you deal with is when the spirit comes from a fallen angel, it's going to be evil. Because I don't think God intends that the holy angels do such things. So I don't think it's possible that you're going to have a good inbred. It's always going to be a bad inbred hybrid.
Yeah. That's just something, you know, I've thought of along that line, but I have not come to any conclusion about it, because I know God's not from here, so it wasn't definitely just because aliens were breeding with humans. It had to be their evil acts, strictly.
Right, and I think, and this is just something that I've toyed with, and I'll just throw this out to you. You know, what gave God the right to overshadow Mary and create inside of Mary's womb the Christ? Well, the thing that I've toyed with in my own mind is that the fact that what gave him, if you would, a legal right to do such a thing was the fact that these fallen angels had been hybridization of mankind prior to this. So they had... like if you were in a court of law, so to speak, they had opened the door for this. So God did what was never would have been thought of, is that he created inside of Mary's womb his very self. Just a thought.
Mm-hmm. Alrighty. All right. That's all I had. I just had, you know, those few questions, because I know, you know, even on, it seems like the good side mirrored the bad side in doing, you know, as far as the hybridization program.
Well, except we only have the one case of Christ, which was God in Christ reconciling the world to himself. Now, we do know, interestingly enough, we might bring in another subject, and that is of the Antichrist, who I think will be fathered by Lucifer himself with a human being.
That's what the Bible, you know, seems to tell us anyway, you know, for most interpreted that way anyway. But there again,
I find, you know, a lot to have other ideas of it, but that's my interpretation of it, maybe as well as yours.
Yeah. Alrighty.
All right, Rusty, thanks for the call, man. You also talking about what's the legal right here. you have the fact that Mary verbally agreed with the plan.
This is true.
I mean, it is possible she could have said, it's possible she could have said, oh, no, hang on, fella, time out, this ain't happening. It's possible. She had the free will.
You're right. God wouldn't have done it.
Well, we don't know, but I would assume that he wouldn't, or he would not have given her the opportunity to respond. So I would assume that whatever she decided was how it was going to be.
I think you're right.
So, 623-444-5889, 623-444-5889. From Italy, we have Joe. It's a little bit involved. Let me sum it up. He says that you seem to be agreeing that God is an extraterrestrial. Is that correct?
In terms of not being of this world or this dimension, that would be correct.
Okay. So there you go, Joe. Let me invite whoever else around the world, if you want to participate in tonight's discussion, you can either give us a call, and we would gladly receive it, or you can use the flash message feature on the website. All right. Now, we were talking about, you know, what is it that inspired these angels to fall? And you used the example of a kid growing up watching his dad abuse mom, and he says, I'll never do that. But then one day he grows up, and he does. He abuses his wife. And you said it's because that seed of evil was planted and it just had time to grow inside of him, and finally it manifested itself. And you said that these angels, as they have continued to fall, that's what's happened. They've just seen what their predecessors have done. Two observations. Those that fell have never been able to return. They're trapped here. If what the Bible says is correct, so there's not any angels unfallen who have seen and experienced their predecessors falling. And secondly, what is it that caused the first group to do that when they had, it was unprecedented, had never happened before?
Well, these angels, both fallen and unfallen, are into the spiritual dimension. I'm sure that there are angels in the spiritual dimension which are fallen, which have not taken human form and have not sinned in the same way that these 200 did. Or, in fact, probably more than that.
Yeah, actually. But why did they?
I think the only reason that we know is they lusted after women.
Okay. Boy, it's a good thing Las Vegas was not around back then.
Well, there's also an interesting scripture that the Apostle Paul, in one of the little books, the Epistles, talks about women wearing a head covering. And I used to wonder about that, and it makes a statement because of the angels. And the more I thought about it, the more I got to thinking maybe the Apostle Paul was concerned even in his day that there might would be another incursion.
So how does a woman wearing a hat protect her from these angels that cause 1,000 cattle to run?
I don't know. I'm not sure I could say, other than I think women with their hair long is much more beautiful than women with their head covered.
All right.
I think it was the principle he was talking about.
Okay. Now, are these, you refer to fallen angels. Is this the same group? Do you identify them as the same as the Sumerians called Anunnaki?
I'm not sure. I've still got questions about that.
How much confidence do you place in the accuracy of the books of Enoch, Joshua, and Jubilees?
Yasha, I don't put any confidence hardly in it at all. Jubilees, I feel fairly confident. Enoch, much more confident.
Why?
Because I don't find it varies from the scriptural story as much as like Yasha does. It's,
okay, so that brings up a real theological issue for those who are either Jewish or Christians and who are very orthodox, or we might say very fundamental in their beliefs. Right. And here's the issue. They say that if it's in the Bible, it's correct. If anything varies from that, then what varied is incorrect. So at every point where Enoch varies from what's in the Hebrew Bible or the Christian Old Testament, every place where Enoch varies from that, they would say Enoch is incorrect. How do you handle that?
I would agree with them.
Okay, well, then in Genesis chapter 6, where it says, where it tells us this story about B'nai Elohim coming to the daughters of men, it merely states that the Nephilim were on the earth in those days when the B'nai Elohim came to the daughters of men. And therefore, they could not be the offspring if they were there when it happened.
I believe you're misunderstanding that. It also says that after that.
They were there when it happened and after that.
When they came into the daughters of men.
Well, let me just read it. The Nephilim were on the earth in those days, and also afterward, when the sons of God came to the daughters of men, who were of old, men of renown. And so it identifies the Nephilim as a race that was there when this happened, but not a race that is the result of it happening.
Well, I've studied this Hebrew, and I've studied this in more than one version.
Well, versions don't matter. Versions are just somebody's opinion of what that says. What matters is the Hebrew.
Exactly.
All right, we have to take a break. I'll pick up there and let you answer that when we come back. We'll be back, ladies and gentlemen, right after this. Don't go away. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is C.K. Quarterman. And we are having, an outstandingly interesting and lively discussion about some of this ancient weirdness. I think most of us realize that something very, very odd is happening in our world. This ain't normal. This ain't right. Bad English, but that's good preaching, right? Okay, so here's the deal. When we do these shows, we're trying to sort of get some information here about what might be going on. We're not saying that this is what's going on. The Kevin Smith Show's not saying that. I think Mr. Quarterman is certainly putting forth his theory about, or his views about, what he thinks is going on, and that's what we want to hear. But as we went away for break, I asked a pretty thorny question. And the question was, how much confidence do you put in Enoch, Jasher, and Jubilees? And he told us those are ancient books, not in the Bible. And I said, well, you know, a lot of theologians say if it's in the Bible, it's correct, and anything that varies from that is not correct. And he said, I agree with that. All right, and then I asked the question, Mr. Quarterman, well, okay, then Genesis, its version of what happened in Hebrew, it states that the Nephilim were here at the time this event of interbreeding took place, and they were here afterward. So right. I was saying if they were here at the time it happened, they can't be the product of what happened.
Correction, you said in the Hebrew, but you didn't read it in the Hebrew, you read it in the King James.
No, I read it in the New American Standard because my audience, except those in Israel, don't speak Hebrew. Okay.
All right, but you said Hebrew.
In Hebrew, it says exactly...
No, it doesn't say that in Hebrew.
It yes,
it
does.
The American Standard Bible.
No, it says it in Hebrew.
I'm sorry it doesn't.
I am sorry it does. It says it in Hebrew. The Nephilim were here when the B'nai Elohim came to the daughters of men, and they were here afterward as well.
I'm reading it out of the Orthodox Jewish Bible. I can read it out of E.W. Bullinger's Companion Bible, which would make a little bit more sense to English readers, where it says there were Nephilim in the earth in the days of Noah after their destruction by the flood, as well as before it, when the angels came in unto the daughters of men, and they bare children to them, the same became mighty men which were of old, men of renown. Now we could also go over to the Septuagint, which was available during the days of Christ and possibly were even quoted by Christ himself. It says, now the giants...
You need to sort of get center of your... You need to get in the center of your screen again. We're just seeing your ear.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Now the giants were upon the earth in those days, and after that, when the sons of God were wont to go into the daughters of men.
So in both cases, you have the Nephilim present when the event took place.
When the sons of God were wont to go into the daughters of men.
The Nephilim were present. So they can't be the
cause of it.
They cannot be the result of that union.
I'm sorry, but that's not the way I read it.
Well, if they were here when the sons of God were wont to go into the daughters of men, they were here before they went to the daughters of men. They were here at the time of the event. Chronologically, they were here.
I understand your reasoning there, but that's not the way I'm reasoning out of what I'm reading in the Hebrew.
Okay, so you just you interpret that differently, but
right.
Okay, you're off screen again. The Nephilim in that Hebrew passage are given as a time marker. It's like you would say that freeway was built at such and such a time. Now the big cathedral was already there when that freeway was built. Well, the Nephilim were there when this event happened. Chronologically in the Hebrew, that's what you've got.
That's not exactly the way I'm reading that. I mean, I could see how you can see that in the King James.
No, in the Hebrew. In the Hebrew. In the Hebrew, they were there when this event took place and afterward.
But when the sons of God came in unto the daughters of men.
The Nephilim were present on the earth when the sons of God came to the daughters of men.
Right, that's saying, what caused it.
No, you told us the Nephilim were the offspring of...
Exactly.
Okay, you can't be the offspring and be present at the time of inception.
But if you go back up to the and read the whole four verses, it's very obvious what it's talking about.
Well, let's do that. I will be reading from English because that's what my audience reads. Let me grab an extra pair of glasses here. It's very small print. And I'm old. Now, it came about when men began to multiply. This is Genesis chapter 6.
And this is the ASV version?
This is the New American Standard.
New American Standard. You don't have a King James there, do you?
No, but the King James is notoriously bad translated.
Some would say.
No, it is. Absolutely true. It came about when men began to multiply on the face of the land and daughters were born to them, that the sons of God, that's B'nai HaElohim, saw the daughters of men, which were beautiful, and they took wives for themselves, whomever they choose. And the Lord said, My spirit shall not strive with man forever, because he's also flesh. Nevertheless, his days shall be 120 years. The Nephilim were on the earth in those days and afterward when the sons of God came to the daughters of men. And they bore children to them. They were the mighty men who were of old, the men of renown. And it reads that same way in Hebrew. They're given as a time marker as when did this event take place. Well, it took place at a time when the Nephilim were here. And they were here afterwards as well. They were here before that event, obviously during it, and after it. And now, where we get the idea that they are the offspring is in the book of Enoch.
I sort of disagree with that, but let's say that that's true. So let's go from there.
Well, I'm not trying to say either one or the other of these is the right one. What I'm trying to decide here is one body of evidence says they were here when the event took place. The other body, being the book of Enoch, says they are the offspring of the B'nai HaElohim and human women.
I understand that you feel like you've made your point, but I don't agree with you.
We'll read it in Hebrew again. Not the Septuagint, that's Greek. Read it in Hebrew.
Well, if I were going to read it from the true Hebrew, it would be quite difficult. It's easier to read it from something like E.W. Bullinger's Companion Bible or a Jewish publication or Orthodox Jewish Bible.
Yeah, that'll do. Orthodox Jewish Bible.
Okay. Nephilim were on the Herzitz in those Yemen, and also after that, when the B'nai HaElohim came in unto the Benat Hadam, and they bore children to them, the same became Gibram, which were of old.
So it's the same thing. They were there when? Hey, we're out of time. This is a mystery. We're going to have to continue and see if we can figure this out. But I want to thank you for being with us. Stay on the line with me as we come to the close of the show here. Ladies and gentlemen, that's it. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.